T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
It'll be better when we have flying cars.
Oh, honey.
I think, again, what can possibly go wrong?
Mm. Although we did have some traffic when we came downtown.
Yeah.
You know why?
My first traffic jam.
Because that getting off on 94 is
the one lane going east from 394 on to 94 as you enter downtown.
Yes.
One lane.
Why can we not figure that out?
Well,
it's a mess every day.
We should ask Mike Max. Actually, we have somebody better we can ask.
Just complain.
I read a story at Vox, V-O-X. Driving, the most dangerous thing most Americans do every day. Virtually every American knows someone who's been injured in a car crash. Mm-hmm. Every year, cars kill about as many people as guns and severely injure millions. Cars killed 42,000 people last year, up from 39,000 in 2019. Worldwide, cars kill 1.3 million people every year, more than murders and suicides combined. Victims are often pedestrians, bikers, motorcyclists, not car passengers. Installing roundabouts instead of traditional intersections seems to be effective. Speed limits enforced by traffic cameras, although many would consider that invasive, they can be effective. We wanted to go to an expert and figure out what's going on. Chuck Marone is the founder and president of Strong Towns. He's a professional engineer and land use planner, decades of experience with a bachelor's degree in civil engineering, a master of urban and regional planning. And he also has a great book out, Confessions of a Recovering Engineer, Transportation for a Strong Town. He makes the argument that our highways, by and large, are designed all wrong. And leaving ourselves vulnerable to more traffic fatalities. And Chuck Marone joins us from Brainerd right now. Hey, Chuck, welcome.
Hey, Paul. Hey, Jordana. Thanks for having me. Yeah, just up the road from you all.
Absolutely.
Are the roads better in Brainerd than they are down here in the Twin Cities?
It depends on what you mean by better. We have our share of congestion and potholes, et cetera. So, yeah.
Chuck, what are we doing wrong when it comes to design, how we lay out our suburbs? I mean, it's quite an onion to try to unpeel, but what is sort of the fundamental sin?
I think there's two, really. And the first one goes towards this idea that we can solve congestion by adding more capacity. There's a lot of people listening to us right now that are stuck in traffic. And they'll say that I'm stuck in traffic, but they are traffic, right? They're part of the traffic stream. If we look at the way we have built our street networks, our road networks, it functions a little bit like a watershed, right? We, in a watershed, all those ditches drain into the streams, drain into the rivers, and then, you know, come together in a big tributary.
Right.
And we grasp that, you know, if you get rain throughout a watershed, you get a flood in the middle, right? That's what happens. Mm-hmm. We've built our transportation system in these hierarchical networks, so everything funnels into the same place at the same time. And so in Minneapolis, St. Paul, every day, just predicted, you get the maximum amount of congestion possible. I mean, we literally create the maximum amount possible. Up here in Brainerd, even though there's a lot less traffic, if you went out at 8 o'clock in the morning and looked around, you would have massive amounts of congestion because we take everybody in the entire region and we funnel them in this watershed of commuters into the same spot at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
There's just no way to build your way out of that. I mean, the more you build, it's kind of like the worse it gets.
So, go ahead. No, the question is, we all have to get downtown. That's where the jobs are. Or we have to get to Brainerd. Mm. That's where the jobs are. How could we have avoided that? And if so, how?
I think you're getting into like the jujitsu move here. This idea that we all have to live on the edge and get into downtown is kind of like the base assumption of the system. But if you look at a watershed and you say, okay, well, how do we stop flooding? How do we stop the Mississippi River from flooding everybody out?
Dikes,
well,
levees.
Do we do that? Yeah, dikes and levees work a little bit, but the reality is they're brutally expensive and ultimately they fail. What we've seen, true, the only real effective way is to actually retain that water back where it's originated. So we don't let people fill in their wetlands. We don't let people run water right into the river. Mm-hmm. You've got to hold it back and let it soak in. From a transportation standpoint, that looks a lot like neighborhoods and corner stores and local jobs and cities actually becoming stronger, better places to live out on the periphery and throughout the state, as opposed to everybody having to get to the same spot at the same time every day.
Well, that sounds good on paper, but I mean, the whole system is designed from the ground up, right, to transport people into the urban centers. And I realize that is changing, especially during the pandemic, more people working from home questioning, why do I need to waste an hour or two of my day stuck in traffic? What at this point, with the infrastructure that we have, and maybe more dollars coming into new infrastructure, new highways, rail, et cetera, what can we do to fix this to improve what we have?
This is the radical question, I think. And you're right. We've established this post-World War II in this way. And it almost feels immutable now, like we can't change it. The reality, though, is that even the Biden administration's plan, which has been whittled down since then, you know, in a bipartisan compromise in the Senate, even the president's plan only repaired 12% of the roads, the highways that are on the backlog list right now.
Wow.
It does that over a decade while more and more roads are added to the list. And so we don't have any real political, social, cultural mechanism. We don't really have the money even to maintain all the highways that we've built, let alone build like the next generation of congestion fighting beltways and, you know, interchanges and everything else. We have to think of a different way to deal with this traffic. And, you know, the work from home thing presents us an opportunity. You mentioned at the beginning flying cars, and I do think that, you know, there's some technology improvements that can help with this. But at the end of the day, we need to start looking at this as more of a local development issue than a transportation issue. And that's a different set of conversations. Hmm.
So, but basically, is that what you're saying? Like the work from home or maybe having not one giant downtown, but hubs out in the suburbs?
In the exurbs and
yeah,
yeah,
is
just
that
build farther out? Or I mean, that's where the jobs should be?
Yeah, we need to evolve into a more flexible economy. And so not only will the jobs be more distributed and have different, you know, neighborhood and regional hubs, but you're going to see the everyday conveniences and the way we, you know, do just day-to-day things like getting milk, getting bread, all that is going to become less centralized and more distributed as well. You know, Minneapolis-St. Paul has adopted some very thoughtful types of land use ordinances, allowing, you know, single-family homes to become duplexes, duplexes to become triplexes. We could double, triple the population of Minneapolis-St. Paul and actually make it a lot nicer place for people to live with a lot less cars. That's hard for us to get our mind wrapped around in the current system. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that not only is that very possible, it's almost necessary if those cities are going to be financially strong in the coming generation.
Are they still going to be cities, though? Is it still going to be a hub? Or do you see, or ideally, would downtown never really revitalize and we would spread out?
Well, if you go back in the history of Minneapolis, Minneapolis had, you know, 2-3 times the population not too long ago of what it has today. We've improved our ability to build nice places. So the idea of smoke, sewage, you know, like all the things that plagued like pre-Depression cities, we've dealt with all those things. We can actually live kind of close to each other in really spectacular places. I think that you will see Minneapolis naturally do that over the next generation. And I think out in the suburbs and the exurbs, it's going to be a hit and miss thing. The places that can become, from a lifestyle standpoint, very nice places to live, I think are going to do really well. And I think the rest will struggle with this huge maintenance burden they've kind of created for themselves.
Hmm. So last question, Chuck, and this has been illuminating.
Really fascinating.
MnDOT Commissioner Margaret Anderson Kelleher, if you could advise her and tell what the top thing, what we're missing, what we could be doing, because speed ultimately is what kills, right? I mean, if you get into a traffic accident, you're going 30 miles an hour, that's different than if you're going 50, 55. And yet we all want to get to where we have to get to on time. What's the number one thing we could do to lower traffic fatality rates and maybe lower our blood pressure at the same time?
I think it's important to note that most of those fatalities are happening on these, not where people are going 65, 70, but they're happening where people are going 45, 50. These kind of middle places where you don't really go very fast because the, you know, you've got all the development along the side of the road, but you don't really have enough of a place to actually get, you know, a sense of place or an actual neighborhood. What I would tell the DOT secretary is that we actually need to build roads or streets. We need to build roads that connect places and shouldn't have development along them, shouldn't, you know, be spending millions, hundreds of millions of dollars robbing the capacity of that road for a little bit of development here and there. And when we get into a city, we should really get the DOT out of the game and start building some great streets, which are naturally going to have very slow traffic. Slow traffic is what allows you to intensify your development pattern, you know, build places where people can walk and bike and what have you, and, you know, shop and do great things. And in those kind of environments, when crashes happen, they tend to be fender benders. They tend to be less violent, less damaging. We can do a lot if we eliminated the stuff that's between 30 and 50 miles an hour. We could really do a lot in terms of mobility, while also making things a lot safer for people.
Very interesting.
This was a fascinating conversation.
Yeah, we need to keep this going because the top three things that, you know, people complain about: the virus mandates, and they complain about the weather. But I think at the top of the list is traffic, and it just seems like such a colossal waste of time. And how do we do things better? So we'd love to have you back, and I'm going to read your book, Confessions of a Recovering Engineer, Transportation for a Strong Town. We're thrilled that you're just up the road in Brainerd. Chuck Marone, thank you for joining us on CCO, and we'll keep the conversation going. We wish you the best.
Thanks. I'm delighted to be here at any time. You guys take care.
Thank you. You know, I got to be honest, I never considered his ideas, changing the way or where we commute, changing the way our exurbs look and our streets look downtown. I mean, this is really a radical change from the way we function.
And I'm thinking, okay, roundabouts, service roads, so that you're not, you know, going from 60 miles an hour down to zero in a few feet.
Less development on
Less development, but that's the tax base, right? All these towns, they want that those tax dollars coming in. Mm-hmm. So it's fresh meat. I don't know.
I don't know either, but it's a fascinating idea.
We should keep pulling this thread and see where it goes.
Really good stuff.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.